I was brought to tears as I listened to the statements. There simply aren't the right words to express our sympathy. Our campus and beyond has been attacked by evil, an individual who broke trust, and so much more.
Any accusations of my handling of any complaints of sexual assault individually are completely false. Every incident reported in that article was documented by either police or the Michigan State Title IX office.
We will cooperate with any investigation going forward, as we have always done. I'm not going anywhere in my mind. I'm definitely not retiring.
It's time for Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana. We'll get you caught up on your Illini sports news along with other area national sports news. Here are Lauren Tate and Michael Kaiser.
Good Saturday morning. Thanks for joining us. 47 degrees at 9:01. That sound courtesy of the Big Ten Network. A very busy day up in East Lansing yesterday, and they also played a basketball game last night, which is kind of pales in comparison to what's been going on. That was Mark Hollis, Mark D'Antonio, and Tom Izzo, the speakers there. That's more to say, but not a whole lot of substance in them. But I was surprised.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
100 and what was the ultimate number? 170?
So, the speakers at Larry Nassar's trial, you mean?
And how
like
many
that.
Complaints were made to Emmert at the NCAA office in 2010? I mean, how can this suddenly be such a big thing and was nothing for all these years leading into it when there were reports of the same thing?
Yeah, the thing was, like, there's two different issues that's been going on at Michigan State for some time. There was the Larry Nassar thing that's been going on for 20 years and almost 20 years before he was finally, you know, fired. But there was also the sexual assaults with athletes, and that there's a lot of those, especially in football. There was a couple in basketball with Adrian Payne and Keith Appling and Travis Walton, who was no longer a player at the time. And so there's two competing things that are really bad going on at Michigan State right now that are being looked at by a wide variety of people.
But the basketball players, that went into legal consideration.
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm getting at is that all these other cases were reported and nothing has been done over year after year after year, and all of a sudden now it's an avalanche.
Yeah, and it's about 170 that spoke at Larry Nassar's trial, and that was just from, like, gymnasts that he dealt with. And the fact that many were able to come forward and speak was pretty incredible. But there's the number of things that are coming out. You mentioned the Mark Emmert from the NCAA in, like, 2010, when 37 he was made aware of 37 different sexual assaults at Michigan State.
Right.
And public doesn't know about a lot of those. Those were kind of swept under the rug a little bit. And you heard Mark D'Antonio. He was pretty fiery last night before the Michigan State basketball game.
Well, if he turned over, I mean, what can he do other than to report if he knows about it? And it's just not his job to resolve it.
It's not
up to the police or the people at Michigan State. That's all a coach can do is report it.
The one thing that he was catching flack for yesterday was back in June. He said that the incidents that happened this past January and this before the 2017 season, he said in June, these are the first time that this is all new to us at the football program. When that actually is not true, and the national media picked up on that yesterday and said, wait a minute, there's been like 16 different cases of these since you've been the head coach there. And I think that's what he's catching flack for right now. I mean, the outside lines report by ESPN yesterday, I don't think I got a chance to read that. It was very, very long, but very worth your time to read.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just, you know, I read it in phases yesterday. It was so long, but I read the entire thing, and I walked away from that going, oh, boy. There's a lot of problems at Michigan State, and that's what led to Mark Hollis stepping down. The president resigned earlier this week, and I don't know what's next. I have no idea. And I'm not going to guess either. He just said something we're going to continue to watch and as it unfolds. But it's we'll have to see. So, again, Michigan State did play a basketball game last night. They didn't win, but Tom Izzo was pretty reserved in the game yesterday. Didn't have a lot to say. The USM Gymnastics entire board of directors will resign, which was the USOC said you better do that, or they're going to threaten to remove them decertify them as a gymnastics organization. That happened last night, where they announced that they will resign at some point, not right away. So there's a lot of fallout from this, and it's just not a You know, had the situation at Baylor with Art Briles, and of course Penn State with Jerry Sandusky.
It's like the old atomic bomb. It hits and then it just spreads and keeps spreading and keeps spreading, and it'll take everybody in authority with it.
Yeah, and do you think that D'Antonio and Izzo both survive this?
Well, I definitely think Izzo will survive it.
I think so as well. I agree with you there.
I think he will because he's so respected and so has always been respected, let's put it that way, at least in the past. And I don't know why you're asking me what can a coach do when some of his players who have their own lives do things that they should be ashamed of.
A coach can't, if
he didn't try to conceal anything, did he?
I have not read that. Not too much, although I did read yesterday with D'Antonio that when he was made aware of a sexual assault several years ago, all he had the player do, again, I don't know how much the university knew, and the university probably was already taking care of the Title IX investigation. He said, go talk to your mom, to the player. And so
when you make that statement, you're assuming that's all he said.
Well, no, that's why I read.
Did he turn it over to?
Well, he said yesterday he was made aware of all the cases by the authorities. I don't think he initially knew of them until he was told by the authorities.
Well, then that's out of his hands. If it's in it's the responsibility of the authorities. I mean, I suppose he can play players until they've been proven to have been involved. I mean, you just can't take everything.
Sure.
There's no assurance that everything you hear is accurate.
I think the key difference here will be, I'm going to compare Baylor and Michigan State for a moment because of sexual assaults, is there was allegations of cover-up with Art Briles and his staff.
Yes.
I don't think there's been a whole lot of that yet. Tom Izzo especially, I don't think there's been a lot of cover-up, but I think there's allegations within the athletic department that these issues at Michigan State were covered up, not specifically by Tom Izzo, but they had people that weren't qualified to do some of these investigations. That's what the Outside the Lines report was alleging yesterday. There were people that weren't even qualified to do some of these investigations. And they had people like with Larry Nassar. They had people like four people that were connected to Larry who liked Larry, was looking into the matter against Larry. And so, you know, ESPN's like, that you can't do that. And so we're going to see how this all falls out. I mean, again, it's just a lot of moving parts with this situation up in East Lansing, so we'll have to see. And then, you know, in other news yesterday, UConn, the basketball program, is being investigated by the NCAA.
Yeah.
So not a really good day yesterday from that standpoint. And just, well, again, we'll continue to watch that. We're going to preview the show today. Coming up, Rob Smith, a new Illini offensive coordinator, was officially introduced yesterday. Of course, spoke to the media last weekend via teleconference. Got in town a few days later, but he said he's been in town since Monday. He'll join us at 9:15. Then at 9:30, Ryan Easterling of IlliniEnquirer.com will join us, give us his thoughts on the departure of Mike Fair, defensive line coach, going to the NFL with the Colts. And then also Nate Shieldhouse, who was not an on-field assistant, could not recruit, left to go to Iowa State, the Cyclones, now with Matt Campbell, the coach there. So we'll get Ryan Easterling's thoughts on the impact on recruiting with losing Mike Fair and the coaching on the defensive line. Then 10 o'clock, Jeff Rabjohns covers the Indiana Hoosiers. Get his thoughts on Indiana, Archie Miller, and Purdue, who Lauren, I think, is the best team in the Big Ten team. Now, Michigan State, I think, has the most talent, the Miles Bridges, and we keep going, Jackson and those guys. But I think Purdue, I watched a little bit of that game the other night, and Michigan played well. But Purdue is really good, and they could score.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Who do you think will be the best from here on out, Purdue or Michigan State?
Are we talking the regular season or the tournament?
Well, just from here on out.
I mean, I think Purdue. Right now, Purdue is my pick to win the Big Ten Conference.
Well, they got a two-game lead, okay.
Yeah, and I'm not saying – I'm saying that because I just think Michigan State, again, has the most talent, which in the end could win out. But Purdue is – man, they're looking really – they've won 16 games in a row.
Historically, Michigan State finishes strong.
Yeah, they do.
And historically, Purdue tends to not finish as strong, even though they look really good. I don't know. I mean, how can you talk hysteric? I mean, I guess you can say that because the coaches have been there a long time,
yeah,
and whatever
exactly
they're doing, Izzo, you know, will be awfully dangerous at tournament time.
Yeah, definitely.
He's had his rough ones too, though.
Yeah, and they lost
2 years ago. They lost to who? Mm-hmm. Middle Tennessee or somebody?
In the first round, and they were the number two seed, and just and they looked really, really good, and thought maybe they were Final Four contender. They didn't make it out of the first game.
Yep.
And then at 10:30, Tim Evans of the Indy Star will dive back into the Larry Nassar situation. He and a couple of his colleagues were part of the, you know, the Indy Star with the investigative report that they did. Really got this thing going with Larry Nassar, especially at a national basis. And the Indy Star was referenced by the prosecutor, the attorney general, at the sentencing of Larry Nassar the other day, and how they got this started along with another gymnast. Without those two things happening, you know, they were saying that Larry Nassar might still be treating people, still be treating gymnasts. And so we'll talk to Tim Evans. It's be good to get his thoughts on kind of how that all got started. Like, how did they even get involved in something like this? I believe they even talked to Larry Nassar a while back as well. So you give us your thoughts this morning. 356-9397 is the phone number. You can also text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. Listen live at WDWS.com. Also email us, talk at WDWS.com. And as always, podcasts of this show and others are on our website and on iTunes. We're going to take a timeout. We'll come back. Rod Smith, the new offensive coordinator for the Illini football team. He's got a quarterback shortage here. That's an understatement. He referenced that yesterday, Lauren, and he's very aware that they need bodies. 4 games of experience on this roster right now, 1 scholarship QB.
Yeah, the rumor is that they've made a couple of offers to mm-hmm. maybe fifth-year guys, and certainly they're going to try to bring in another, at least one, if not two more quarterbacks.
Yeah. And then,
but they got Rivers coming from Texas, which gives them two now.
He can't come till the summer. Caron Taylor, we'll find out in about a week and a half if he's going to sign or not. He doesn't have to sign on that particular day, but that's February 7th is the signing day, second part of the signing period, and we'll find out if his academics have been corrected and put in place so he can come here to the University of Illinois. Stay with us. Rod Smith, Illini offensive coordinator, is up next here on Saturday Sports Talk on DWS.
I think most of you will agree, and of course most of our fans will agree, we need to score more points, as simple as that. And when I started looking, you know, for our new coordinator, I look at stats to see who was really doing what, who had success this past year. And the most important stat, I think, as you talk offensive football, is scoring. And Rod Smith's group, you know, at the University of Arizona, did a great job with that, top 5 scoring.
When Coach called me the first time, I didn't want to answer the phone because it was Lovie Smith, you know. I grew up, I watched him coach in the Super Bowl. I watched him for all those times. So, you know, I was honored to just take the phone call. And then when he wanted to come in and interview, you know, that's one of the moments you go back and you tell your kids, hey, I got a chance to interview with Lovie Smith. You know what I mean? And then he offered me the job, for God's sakes. You know, can you believe that? So I was excited. I was thrilled. Very, very humbled, very honored. And I think his vision, I think his perspective as a man, what he wants to do with these guys as far as how to raise them up, how to coach them up. I'm in tune with that 100%. I couldn't be more excited.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. 47 degrees at 9:16. That's Illini head coach Lovie Smith talking about Rod Smith, and then Rod talking about getting the phone call from Lovie. He joins us now on the program. Coach Smith, good morning. How are you?
Doing very well. Good morning to you guys as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I probably would have reacted the same way if Lovie Smith ever called me. Most likely he won't, but except for this show. But did you even have any contact with Lovie just around the game the last couple of years at all, at conventions or anything at all?
No, I have not. I mean, that was actually, like I said, that was the first time that I've actually had a chance to talk with Coach. So no, I can't say that I have.
Did it come up as Lovie Smith on your caller ID or?
No, because I didn't have him on my phone. It just came up as an Illinois number, and I kind of got a tip that he may be calling, several minutes before the phone call. So, when I saw the Illinois phone call come in, I just figured that must be him.
Well, as you talked yesterday, one of the things you mentioned was there's a lot of young players on this team, but you're excited about that and the experience they got last year. And from the offensive side of things, you got a young offensive line, a young running back in Mike Epstein, who was playing really well last year before he got hurt. As you look at that and how much experience those guys got last season, how does that help them moving forward in their sophomore season?
Well, they've been through some ups and downs, obviously. Yeah. And, you know, you're hoping that all that playing time and experience that they got will come to fruition a little bit, will help them as we move forward. They will be a year stronger, a year more mature. And, you know, now it's just a matter of continuing to put the work in, trying to elevate your level of play. And, you know, we're going to learn a new system. But at the same time, we're going to try to make it simple enough that we can accelerate their learning. Hopefully we can kind of continue to build on what they've been building on and continue to move forward.
Rod, this is Lauren, and I did ask you about this yesterday. I'd like an explanation for the fans who are interested in your relationship with Rich Rodriguez. All those years you played for him, you were quarterback coach for him, you were a coordinator for him, and how did the play calling work with the two of you over the years? How did that evolve?
Oh, yes, sir. I mean, I have a lot of my career is credited to Rich Rodriguez. I mean, I played for Coach. He's the one that broke me into the Division I ranks. So a lot of credit to him as far as my development going through, and learned a lot of football, and I learned how to watch him, how to run programs and do certain things. And, you know, so a lot of credit to him. From a play calling standpoint, you know, we had myself and Calvin McGee were co-offensive coordinators at Arizona. And of course, with Coach Rodriguez being an offensive guy, he definitely was one to be involved. So it was a different dynamic. It was a three-headed type monster. We all had our roles. You know, a lot of times, you know, Calvin would be very good with anything that I saw off through the air, through the passing game that I liked. Boy, you know, I could call it. He would go ahead and rattle it down and run the play. Even run games or certain things with run games, particularly with a quarterback run game or any of that type of stuff. You know, we were all very good with bouncing ideas off each other. So we all three had roles. And, you know, with us being around each other so long, we knew what each other was thinking. So it was a different dynamic, but we made it work. And it was very fun, very unique experience, and, you know, one that I'll take with me forever.
Now, you've only got one scholarship quarterback on campus for spring practice. There's no chance that there'll be another before spring, right? I mean, it's too late now to get anybody in school?
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen because classes have already began.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we're at where we're at. We just got to continue to try to, you know, add depth to that position, bring in more competition. And so we'll probably do that as the summertime and the fall kicks around.
Well, how careful do you have to be in spring ball if you just don't throw Cam Thomas's arm off? Because, you know.
Yeah, we got some of the guys. We got some of the guys that's going to get reps. You know,
right.
We have one scholarship quarterback. Excuse me. We have one scholarship quarterback, not just one quarterback total. So, you know, there's other guys that they'll be able to take reps. It's going to be able to compete. And, you know, by no means no jobs are won. Any job's won in the spring. But at the same time, you know, we want guys to be able to go out and compete and battle, and we'll give everybody the opportunity to see what they can do.
How involved will you be with the other positions as a offensive coordinator? I mean, you've got Luke Butkus is handling the line, but I know that, you know, often coordinators get very involved with the other more than just the quarterback.
Sure. Well, you know, right. My responsibility is to oversee the offense, so I'm going to oversee everything. You know, but my job one right now is to make sure we develop a quarterback that we can win with. And those guys are good coaches. You know, Coach Smith trusts them to put them in place to work for him. So, you know, I'm going to trust them as well to be able to coach their position and do what is asked as far as offensively. So I'm not going to micromanage anybody. That's not my style. I'm going to go in, coach the quarterbacks, and run the offense, and I'll oversee it. And there are certain things that we need to change or that we need to tweak, per se, that we'll do. But at the same time, those guys are tremendous coaches, and we'll give them flexibility, allow them to do their jobs, and hopefully we'll do what's best for our team.
Illini offensive coordinator Rod Smith joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Lauren Tate, Michael Kaiser with you. Arizona averaged 41.3 points a game last year, fifth nationally. Coach, Illinois didn't score 26 points in a game last year, let alone average anywhere near that amount. What kind of breakdown for our listeners what the offense, what you envision? You talked about it yesterday, spreading things out and using every inch of the field.
you know, you always evaluate the type of kids that you have on your roster before you put any plan of action going forward. But at the same time, you know, the base philosophy has always been the same. We're gonna use multiple formations. We're gonna spread the defense out and try to make them defend 53 and a third across the field, and make them defend vertically as well with what we do from a schematic standpoint. So, you know, I always believe that the toughest thing in football is to tackle a very fast kid or a skilled kid in open space, in open field. So we're going to try to get guys out in space, try to isolate some people, and see if we can get some guys on this roster to make some plays.
I mentioned the young offensive line, but you got some big guys, and Vertus Brown coming in next year. Larry Boyd already has a season under him here. What do you see? I know you probably haven't had a chance to watch any film yet or anything like that, or maybe you have, but what do you see from that offensive line, and what's your vision for them?
Sure. You know, I've peeked a little bit just to kind of see what we have. You know, I'm excited for Coach Butkus because I know that, you know, he's went through the growing pains of playing such young guys, and that's going to pay off. You know, so moving forward, those guys will be stronger, bigger, faster, hopefully, and, you know, more technique sound. So as we're moving forward, I'm excited because I see some potential in some of those guys. And, you know, there's some big, good-looking, long-rangey fellows. So it'll be interesting to see, obviously, moving forward in the spring. But, you know, I'm excited, eager to work with them and see how Coach Butkus can develop that group.
The running game Lovie Smith talked about yesterday, obviously you heard him, that's a big focus for him. And Mike Epstein, I touched on him. Have you got to watch any film on him? And he's from down in Florida. And have you got to see any of his film for the first few games he played before he got hurt?
Yeah, a little bit. Like I said, my film's been limited because I've had so much other stuff that I've had to do. But at the same time, I have glimpsed a couple of times just to check out personnel to see what we played with last year, what type of skill sets they have a little bit. Yeah, Mike's a guy that looks like he can help us. He can help this football team. We got to, you know, make sure he's healthy and he's good to go and all that type of things. But, yeah, he definitely looks like somebody that can help our offense.
Do you know if he's going to be healthy enough to play this spring, or have you not gotten that far yet?
I haven't gotten that far yet. Not sure.
Okay. Illini offensive coordinator, just hired a little over a week ago, joining us on Saturday Sports Talk for a couple more minutes. You were asked yesterday about recruiting the West Coast. I know Illinois has some California kids. Hardy Nickerson, defensive coordinators from out there, so that helps as well. You spend a lot of time out there. How difficult do you think it would be to bring players that far? Because there's so many of them. Do you think it'd be hard to bring enough talented players from way over on the West Coast here to Illinois?
Oh, no, I don't think it would be. I mean, just because of what you said, there's so much population out there. There's so many kids to draw from. They all can't go to the home school, and there's so many good players. So they're kind of like Florida. You know, they will travel. They'll travel for an opportunity. You know, and when you talk to them about the University of Illinois, and you're like, wow, you know, look at the academic prestige that we have. You're in the Big Ten. You know, all those things we can sell. And I just think it's a very attractive situation for guys out, whether it be out west, down south. I mean, to me, we're geographically, we're kind of stuck in the middle of all of it. And that's, to me, that's very attractive for a young man.
Rod, I think we had six players here for the basketball game, football prospects, and I assume that you have more today. What's the rest of your day consist of?
Well, we have official visits today. Some of the kids came in last night, and you know, so we get more of them coming in today. Some guys had ball games, basketball games, and things like that, but they arrived today, so we'll have a full day's schedule of events, of you know, meetings with administration, with you know, the school, the head of the schools, the degrees that they're interested in, you know, meetings with the coaching staff, positions. All those things, and then they'll get to hang out with the players and whatnot this evening. So it's a full day, full schedule of events for them, and just trying to show them everything there is about Illinois.
Well, Coach, final thing for you. I'm sure your family's anxious for you guys all to get back together. But what'd they say when you said we're moving from Arizona to the frozen tundra of Illinois? You've been here before. I know you've been here before, but I mean, so what do they say when you're going to leave the nice weather to come back?
Well, that, you know, they're excited. I mean, it's an opportunity. You know, my wife's from the Bronx.
Okay.
You know, I'm from the state of West Virginia, so it's a chance to get back closer to home where you can see family a little bit closer. That was the first thing. And then the second thing is they were excited about the opportunity to get back in the Big Ten, to get back in a place where, you know, with Coach Smith, who's a household name, and just a great opportunity to come and take over a situation and get it right back on the winning track of what it needs to be. You know, I had a chance to see Juice Williams the other day. He stopped by the office and
cool.
Got a chance to meet him. And, you know, that was good, just talking with him and just trying to connect with the former alumni. All those things are exciting, man. And he's excited. There's other people excited. So, you know, it's reciprocated our family as well.
Well, Rod, we appreciate your time this morning. I know it's a busy day, as we just talked about. So thanks so much for joining us, and we'll be talking to you again down the road for sure.
Well, much appreciated. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rod.
Thanks for having me.
Yep, you're welcome. That is new Illini offensive coordinator Rod Smith, hired a week ago yesterday, was introduced to the media yesterday for the first time, been in town since Monday. Of course, the new Illini tight ends coach Cordy Patterson out of St. Louis was introduced yesterday as well. And so we'll have two new coaches, but Lauren, there's still more coaching positions open. There was one before Thursday, and now they have two, if my math is correct, because Nathan wasn't an on-field coach, Nate Schulhouse. So I think there's two still outstanding spots.
They need a defensive line coach.
Yes.
And they need a defensive backfield coach unless they want to flip people around.
Yep.
But that line coaching job is huge. Fair did a really good job here.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's got a chance to go back to the NFL with the Indianapolis Colts. And I think it's fair to say that the pay at the NFL level is probably a couple hundred, generally speaking, $100,000 to $200,000 to $300,000 more than at the same position in college. That, of course, fluctuates and varies, but we know that the Colts are probably playing more than Illinois in that situation, so he couldn't very well turn it down. And, of course, they haven't formally announced that yet, but they will when the Colts have a head coach.
Yeah, which is going to be Josh McDaniels when the Patriots
right.
probably win another Super Bowl next Sunday. Well, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Ryan Easterling of IlliniEnquirer.com. Get his thoughts on what we just talked about. Mike Fair leaving a whole defensive line coach position. What does it do for recruiting as well? Ryan's coming up next here on DWS.
You know, outstanding football coach, outstanding man. You know, we have history. You know, I coached Mike at Arizona State, so we've been together for a long period of time. But, you know, good football coaches sometimes decide to leave and take on a different challenge. That's a part of it. With our program, people will want our coaches. And the NFL will take some of our coaches. That's okay. That's a part of it. The NFL will take some of our players. That's okay, too. And what we'll do is we'll replace them with other good coaches. You know, sometimes when you've played at a university and only been at that university, it's good to go away. You know, but Nathan Schulhouse is bright. Again, he'll do a great job for Iowa State. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we haven't, you know, hopefully someday we'll get a chance to coach together again.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk on DWS. Lauren Tate, Michael Kaiser with you. Lovie Smith yesterday on former defensive line coach Mike Fair leaving for the NFL and then Nathan Schulhouse leaving for the running backs coach at Iowa State. Please be joined now by Ryan Easterling of IlliniEnquirer.com. Ryan, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Pretty good. Well, just before the break, I was doing some math on it's two open positions right now for Lovie Smith with all the moving parts here the last week or so, and I wasn't expecting Thursday what transpired with Nathan Schulhouse and Mike Fair. Let's start with Mike Fair, though. Kind of a big loss from a coaching standpoint and what he's done for the defensive line the last few years.
Definitely, and I mean he was a guy that was around before Lovie even got to Champaign. He was a guy who was hired under Cubitt and did a great job to kind of hold that defense together during that transition. And, you know, he had a lot of NFL background, not really a college guy by trade, but, you know, I thought he did a really great job. He was a well-liked guy. And, you know, it's kind of like Lovie said, when you're doing the right things, the NFL is going to want you. And they understand that he would probably get a call like that. And, you know, for Mike, it's an opportunity to get back in the NFL where he might be more comfortable. And I thought he did a fairly good job recruiting, but Some of those guys don't necessarily want the grind of being on the road all the time like that, and it's understandable. He had a great opportunity here and has I guess for him personally, an even better opportunity to get back into the league and not have to move too far away to do it too. Presumably he'll be coaching under Josh McDaniels, mm-hmm. who's coaching in the Super Bowl right now. So I think it's a good job for him. And, you know, Lovie Smith has a pretty wide reaching net. So I don't anticipate too many issues with him getting to fill that spot. I would imagine he's already got his short list and has some candidates in mind that he would like to get on board pretty quick.
I wanted to ask you about the recruiting. You kind of touched on it there. How big of a loss recruiting wise is this? Was he just obviously he recruited, but is this how does this impact the staff recruiting?
Well, I mean, I don't think Mike Farrah was one of your rock star recruiters quite like Thad Ward was, or like you're hoping Corey Patterson would be, but he was a solid recruiter. I don't want to sell him short on that because I thought he did a really good job establishing relationships, given that he didn't really have a deep college background. Like I said, he was a pretty approachable guy, always pretty positive. And I think he did, you know, he had roots in Arizona, but I think he did a pretty good job, too, of establishing himself in the state. You know, along with Luke Butkus and Lovie Smith, he was also pretty involved with Vertus Brown. And so, you know, I thought he did a pretty good job of being present. I thought he was, you know, as best as he could, was relatable to a lot of these kids. And, you know, the product he put on the field spoke for itself in a lot of ways, too. He sent several guys to the league. Even after that whole Zook era where they had so many defensive linemen going to the league, he kind of kept that up and continued to put guys into the NFL. So, you know, it will be a loss, but I think at the same time, this is another opportunity to fill the void that he is leaving with another good recruiter. And I think Lovie Smith has probably, like I said, a short list of guys that he would prefer to fill in that position and probably had a feeling that this might have been coming for some time.
Well, Ryan, before we get off of Fair, let's talk about the defensive line, because we always refer to the front four, but when you have 230-pound or 240-pound defensive ends, that seems to me like not enough bulk to handle the opposing running. What's your thoughts on whether Roundtree and some of these players that played last year as freshmen can develop to where Illinois can stop the running game of the opposition?
Well, this is going to be a crucial offseason for all those freshmen that played this last year. You know, they got Owen Carney in at the winter semester last year and had a chance to put some weight on him. But Roundtree, Isaiah Gay, Jamal Woods, all those guys, they showed up in the summer and had to put on weight fast. And, you know, considering what a guy like Bobby Roundtree came out of high school weighing, I thought he did a really good job of putting that weight on. He's got a superb frame for being able to carry more weight. So I'm really eager to see what Joey Bose has been able to do this offseason with those guys to get them up to a better playing weight, because I think you'll probably see Roundtree eventually, as big as he is, play about 265, 270 and look like He-Man. So, you know, getting that additional healthy weight on those guys this offseason is going to be big, and you get some good help in the interior of the defensive line, because you add a guy like Vertus Brown, who's so stout and strong, and you get Calvin Avery, who's a bull in there too. Adding him, those two guys to the mix with Jamal Milan and Tymir Oliver, you know, I think the interior of your defensive line is good, but where you really want to see the physical development is with your defensive ends, and that's why this offseason is so crucial for those guys in the weight room.
By the way, you mentioned Vertus Brown, and he's listed as the defensive lineman, and my inside word is he's going to play center. Now, what do you think he'll play?
I don't know. It depends on who the new coach wants to fight. If the new defensive line coach wants to fight Butkus, I know his impression. I don't think I'd want to fight Butkus too much either.
No.
But you know, what he's been told so far, at least at the time of his decision, his plan was to come in and play a three technique defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether that's changed in the last month with Fair's departure, I can't say for sure. But you know, his mindset was to play defensive tackle. He was a solid center but I've always envisioned him as a defensive lineman. He's just so strong that I think he could really be a good gap control defensive tackle. He'll free things up for a guy like Calvin Avery. Those two really complement each other well. So that's why I'd like to see him do that. Now, maybe he starts at center his first year, but I'd really like to just see him get entrenched on the defensive line and just build on that strength that they have there. Because I think before too long, he's just going to end up on that side of the ball because it just makes too much sense.
A lot of it might depend on Kramer, the starting center this last year, whether he's good enough, whether he can hold down the center position, and then they wouldn't have to worry about it. He'd be there for several more years. I mean, he was a redshirt freshman this last year, so he'd have three more seasons. And they'd love for Kramer to be the guy because that would release – I would think that would release Brown for defense. By the way, Brown played in that All-Star game. He played offensive guard. So he's been moved around a little bit. But I just thought I'd bring it up because I think it's still open as to what will happen.
Sure. And the other possibility is you also have Kendrick Green, who played center in high school as well. So, you know, between he and Brown, I would imagine one of those guys land at center and one of them end up on the defensive line. Just they'll probably mix things up as they get an opportunity to work with them in the spring and just see what the best fit is for both of those guys.
Ryan Easterling of Atlanta Inquirer joining us here on DWS Saturday Sports Talk. Kendrick Green, I'm glad he redshirted this year. He didn't get any reps, and I think that's going to be key for him moving forward just because of his talent level. I thought with all the freshmen coming in, he might get some snaps, but unless I missed some, he didn't get any snaps this year. Is that correct?
No, he redshirted. He, Larry Oladipo, and Deion Pate were the three guys that redshirted, and all, I guess, as far as how they were labeled coming out of high school, were defensive linemen because they had such a big haul in that 2017 class on the D-line. They were able to redshirt a couple of those guys. So I think that was good just as far as development and getting them up to speed and not putting them in to a situation that wasn't necessarily best for them at the time. That gives them a chance to develop and get comfortable with what they're going to be doing.
Give Ryan a follow on Twitter, at Ryan Easterling. Well, an interesting commitment last night, an interesting way. Of course, a kicker has socks. His feet let you know where he's going, and Caleb Griffin wore Illini socks last night before the game. He plays for Danville, plays basketball, and I got to see him in one game this season. We broadcasted the Danville game over there, and right before halftime, he nearly made a 50-some yarder for the Vikings, and I'm like, man, I'd like to see this kid over here in Champaign, and that's what he announced last night. He's gonna blue shirt. He's going to be a part of the 2019 class. How big of a get is this? We don't always talk about kickers.
Well, I think it's really important because usually you don't pay attention to the kicker until they mess up.
Yep.
And Griffin's a guy that's got really good mechanics, really good range. I think the thing I like most about him, though, is he's a really good athlete. You know, you've seen some kickers that struggle with consistency that aren't necessarily the best athletes, but he's a great athlete. There's a video of him throwing down, like, windmill dunks and things like this, and he's a good basketball player. So, you know, the last real great athlete kicker I think I remember was Derek Dimke, and you saw how that turned out. He was a great kicker at Illinois. So I think this is a big pickup. You know, you've only got Chase McLaughlin for another, I think, a year or so. So you got to get somebody to fill in, and you haven't really got a whole lot of consistency out of James McCourt. Now, I mean, there will still be competition there. It's going to be open competition. But, you know, adding a guy like Griffin that had D1 offers and picked up an Iowa offer the night before his decision, you know, it's a guy that other people wanted, and I think it's an important position that if you get a consistent performer there, it's one less thing to worry about as far as your specialists are concerned. Now you've got a great punter in Blake Hayes, and you're going to have another really solid, consistent kicker in Caleb Griffin.
I'm going to switch you over to offense here because it seems to me every year or two, Illinois changes the offensive direction, coordinator, leader. And with McGee gone, and Rod Smith certainly impressed everybody yesterday and this morning when we talked to him. But how difficult is it to change so repeatedly at that key position?
Well, I think one of the important things with the Rod Smith hire is that you're not completely reinventing the wheel from what you were doing before. You were recruiting the personnel for the same type of offense that he runs. You saw a little more power run game a la the Bobby Petrino system under McGee, but they've got speedy quarterbacks. They're recruiting guys that can really sling it in Taylor and Rivers, and still have another offer or two out. Some guys, you're not really reinventing your roster and reshaping your roster. And I think that was one of the challenges. If you talk about Nathan Shielhouse, he had four offensive coordinators in 4 years, which is just extremely detrimental to a quarterback's development. And then you go to a guy like Rod Smith, who's noted as a developer of quarterbacks. I think that's going to be big, especially with as young as they'll be at quarterback and how raw some of those quarterbacks are. It gives him a chance if he's going to be here for 2, 3, 4 years and they commit to him. I think it's going to give him an opportunity to really mold these guys to fit this offense, you know, as long as he's sticking around. And I think they're not really starting from scratch like they have in the past, where they've gone from spread to power run back to a pro-style spread type thing. So, I don't think that it's going to be necessarily as big of a learning curve. If anything, the biggest learning curve will be the youth. But they've got the tools to run this offense, and I think the key will just be getting it ingrained in a lot of those guys that played this last year. And then also once the summer comes along, integrating the 2018 guys that come in and really just getting that quarterback battle going and not just handing off the reins to a quarterback by default like they kind of did this past year.
Well, they're going to hand it off by default this spring because Cam Thomas is the only one.
And
my big question to you is Cam Thomas good enough?
I think he can be. You know, I've seen him play. I saw him play in high school. And I think his high school performance and his high school stats are misleading because he really didn't have a whole lot of talent around him at Marion Catholic. He did as a freshman. But a lot of his best players, I mean, you look at that Homewood Flossmoor roster, and a lot of their best players used to go to Marion Catholic. And so he had didn't have a whole lot of weapons to work with. Now, because of that, I think that lack of success probably stunted his growth a little bit, you know, just because you couldn't get that confidence built up and everything and getting that flow. But at the same time, I mean, he's got some of these tools, and that's why a guy like Rod Smith coming in is such a big deal, because he's a guy that's, like I said, noted for developing quarterbacks, and you see what he can possibly do with a guy like Cam, especially with as good as he is with his feet. You know, I think Cam Thomas, the passer, is still going to be a work in progress, but I think with a guy like Rod Smith at the helm calling these plays, he's going to get the best out of Cam Thomas as a runner, and I think that's what's probably going to be his biggest leap this year, is that he'll be put in better positions to run the football and do a little more read option with guys like Mike Epstein and Reggie Corbin.
Ryan Easterling of Atlanta Enquirer joining us for a couple more minutes here on Saturday Sports Talk. Give him a follow on Twitter at Ryan Easterling. Ryan, I want to ask you about Corin Taylor and what the latest that you're hearing with him is. I know signing day is just around the corner, the second set of signing day coming up here. What's the latest with him?
Well, everything I've heard over the last month and a half is that his situation has improved. I mean, it sounds like he's at least on track, but you know, we won't really know until he puts ink to paper and signs and then if he shows up in the summer. I mean, he would be a big piece to this whole situation. I kind of see him a lot like a Pat White, if you want to compare to a former Rod Smith quarterback. He's a guy that, you know, I think as a senior, he passed for around 1,800 yards, rushed for about 1,500, something like that. And those are about the ratios of Pat White's passing to running, too. He's a guy that is a physical player, but has really good athleticism and a huge arm. So, you know, if nothing else, I think you need him in that quarterback room for competition and depth. He's a guy who I think can really has a high ceiling, and you know, getting him on campus would be a big deal, just for the sake of getting a full quarterback room and just being able to develop an in-state guy that's was one of the first ones to really buy into this program.
Ryan, have you heard whether his situation is more test score? Or whether he'll need to have certain grades when this semester is over?
I don't really know. I don't try to pry on too many guys' academic specifics. You know, it could very well be a test score. It could very well just be one or two courses that he needs to close out. And, you know, but a lot of times the staff will put together a plan for these guys to get that closed out and get everything taken care of. So, mm-hmm. You know, it sounds like a similar situation to what Ricky Smalling had coming out of high school. And what I've actually heard is that Karan's in better position than Ricky was. So I would say that's encouraging if Ricky was able to make it on campus. And so, you know, getting him taken care of and everything is going to be a big thing. And if he's able to sign in February, then I think that gives you a big boost.
Ryan, one final thing from me. Nate Shielhouse leaving the staff, obviously wasn't an on-field coach, could not recruit. I know he did at times when there was a staff shortage, but it disappointed to see him go, but was this the right decision by Lovey to in terms of hiring other coaches and maybe not Nate right now?
I don't think it was an easy decision
right, for
Lovey because, you know, if you're talking about Corey Patterson versus Nate Shielhouse, yeah, it's close. It's close because both bring some great qualities to the table. You know, I don't think anybody sells Corey Patterson's ability as a coach short. And you know, Nate gave blood, sweat, and tears for this program. 4-year starter, really, really high football IQ. I think he would have been a great addition to the staff too. I just think maybe the timing wasn't right. It's unfortunate. I think if there was another staff opening on the offensive side of the ball, then I think absolutely he would have gotten an opportunity. I think Lovey would have kept him around, but just kind of looking at the numbers and what they needed to do as far as rounding out this whole staff, I just think that they probably didn't have a spot for him now. I would love to see him come back.
Sure.
I got a chance to know Nate from his freshman year of college and spent a lot of time around he and his family during that time. And, extremely high character guy, well-liked, actually had grown some great roots in the state of Illinois as far as his ability to recruit, liked by high school coaches in this state. And now they're going to have to recruit against him. And it's going to be tough. I think there's going to be some battles. But I think this will be a good opportunity. As long as I think they stay in touch, keep that relationship going. I think that they need to make sure that he doesn't feel jaded, that he doesn't feel put off or cast off by this program. I think they need to say, hey, this is why we did what we did. We would love to have you back when the time is right. Because I think he's a guy that, with his dedication and how much he proved at Illinois and has so many records in the football record book, that he would be a guy that I would love to see come back in some capacity, whether that's as depending on down the road, a quarterback's coach or some sort of offensive coach, just because I think he would bring so much to the program down the line once he has a chance to kind of cut his teeth as a full-time assistant on the staff for more than just a year.
Larry Boyd was a player at Trinity and played under Patterson. Of course, Lovey recruited him through Patterson, and Boyd, I think, is a real prospect and started all season this year in the offensive line. How many are you aware of how many players are at Trinity Catholic alone that would be major prospects and in that conference in St. Louis? It seems like many of the players are in that conference.
Yeah, Trinity Catholic is just a load of talent. They've got so many guys with Division I offers, and Patterson was a big part of that. Not only just how he developed the players, but just how he was able to get them exposure and build that program from what was essentially nothing. He got Larry Boyd to come over to that Trinity Catholic program, and a lot of those guys followed. And now you look at guys like Isaiah Williams, Shimon Cooper, Marcus Washington, Terrion Cooper, Bryce Childress. There's probably 15 guys on that roster that have an Illinois offer, and I think Patterson really opens up the door.
Whoa.
And increases their possibility.
15 players off one team have got Illinois offers?
They're loaded, man.
I mean,
they are not the only program in St. Louis. The other thing to pay attention to that I think gets overlooked a lot is that Lutheran North, which is where Ronnie Perkins, who's headed to Oklahoma, mm-hmm. played, their head coach, Carl Reed, is very good friends with Corey Patterson, and they have a handful of guys with Illinois offers, including Jack Buford, who is Thomas Rooks's, I think, nephew.
Okay.
So, there's a lot of talent in that St. Louis area. So, when you look at the decision between Patterson and Shieldhouse, while it's tough, you understand that this gives you a serious advantage and a leg up in St. Louis recruiting in a very, very, very crucial year that could potentially be a game changer for this roster.
Well, Ryan, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much. I know I would say that's a really busy time of year for you usually, but a lot of players already signed last month. So we just got to wait to see what happens on February 7th. What's the 15 transfers right now, and how many can sign on the 7th? Was it 8 or 9?
I think there are about 8 or 9 open scholarships, okay. But as far as the class size, I don't know that they're going to be able to fill every single one of those with a signee. I think they've got a few that they would have to use on grad transfers, and they're looking at a few of them. So, and I think that helps, too, with roster balance. That'll help you out with a little bit of roster balance. And if you don't use them, then you're kind of just wasting house money.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Ryan, have a great weekend. We appreciate it. Good stuff as always.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Ryan Easterling, give him a follow on Twitter at Ryan Easterling, 24/7 Sports, IlliniInquirer.com. We'll have come up at 10 o'clock again. We're going to have Jeff Rabjohns, covers the Hoosiers, Indiana recruiting, Archie Miller, thoughts on the Big Ten, maybe the Purdue Boilermakers as well. Then at 10:30, Tim Evans of the Indianapolis Star, he and a couple colleagues broke the Larry Nassar story along with a gymnast who came out around the same time, and that's where he reached this week, where he was sentenced to up to 175 years in prison. When we come back, a couple of college basketball coaches got an extension. Well, they didn't get the extension yesterday. One of them had one for a while. We just found out about it yesterday. But, man, it was really surprising. We'll tell you who that is.
And you tell me how Nunn's doing.
Yes. Okay. Former Illini doing his thing. We'll tell you all about that coming up next. This is Saturday Sports Talk on DWS.
Last year got a chance to know Corey recruiting one of his players, Larry Boyd, that's really done well in our program. But I got a chance to see him mentor, teach, own and off the football field, And I knew then if someday we did have an opportunity to get him on our staff, I was going to do everything possible to make sure that that happened. Corey's done an outstanding job down in the St. Louis area at Trinity Catholic. He built their program up. Of course, they're winning a lot of games right now, and he's really sending out good guys going on to different programs.
I think the things that make me a pretty good coach are the same things that I'll continue doing. Just getting to know my guys, being there for them, working hard with them, not just getting on them, helping to build and grow young men. I think that'll be the biggest thing to do. The football, that'll kind of handle itself.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Lauren Tate, Michael Kinzer with you. That was Lovie Smith and Corey Patterson, the new tight ends coach for the Illini football team. And of course, as you know, he's out of Trinity Catholic. A lot of players, as Ryan Easterling just told you, just on that squad alone. So we'll welcome them to town. Corey Patterson and Rod Smith officially introduced yesterday. Lovie Smith had a news conference to introduce them. Well, we told you before the break, a couple of coaches. One was announced yesterday, and that was Mike Anderson at Arkansas. Got a new two-year contract extension. Another coach, this time, this one in the Big Ten, was taken care of in November, wasn't really announced. And Scott Dochterman, our good friend Lauren, who covers the Iowa Hawkeyes, we had him on a week or two ago. He helped get the contract details for this. The Land of 10 has it. Fran McCaffrey had a contract extension that was announced. It was released in some fashion yesterday through 2023. What? I mean, what?
What are they thinking?
What are they thinking? Now, my favorite part about this contract extension, if the school decides to fire him this offseason, which with a contract extension, that's not going to happen. But if they, let's just say that they decide to fire him this offseason, how much money do you think he's going to get paid, Lauren?
$10 million.
$10.2 million for Fran McCaffrey to go away because of his new deal. Iowa right now.
It's not money.
It's not.
It's monopoly.
It is. It's, and Iowa has a huge crowd at every football game who helps pay for these kind of things. But
well,
Iowa right now,
$50 million from the Big Ten every year too.
Yeah, Iowa right now 11-11, just like the Illini, and they had a miracle win here in Champaign.
Well, their whole theory over there is that they got to keep McCaffrey because his son's the best player in Iowa, 6'7" or so. I don't know how big he is.
Yeah, that's true.
He's coming in and he's already committed, and they think that he's already got one son there who's been injured but is going to be playing, and so you know that I think that ties into it.
I that makes complete sense, and if that
does it make sense?
Well, your reasoning, your that I understand if they want to get that kid, but I don't know if Iowa's won enough to give him. I'm not saying he needs to be fired this offseason. I'm not sure. I'm not studying.
He just needs to get somebody in there to give him an idea how to play just a tiny bit of defense.
Yeah.
They just don't play defense, and that's their problem.
No, and
you look up and say, well, gee, you know, Iowa would have won, but the other team shot so well. Well, of course you shoot well when you're not being covered. I mean, that's the problem.
You're wide open all the time.
Yeah.
Well, one other quick note before we take a timeout. We also teased Kendrick Nunn, former Illini. Of course, if he didn't get arrested and get in trouble with the law, he wouldn't be playing basketball in college this year anyway. He would have graduated with Malcolm Hill last year. But he had to sit out a year. He transferred to Oakland after he was removed from the team, from John Gross's team. He had 33 points last night. Nothing unusual there. He's been doing that for a lot of the season. And 19 of his 33 in the second half, helping Oakland to an 83-70 win. Still second in the nation in the scoring, and he's just not going to catch Trae Young at this point. Trae Young, unless he just kind of falls off the map, Lauren's averaging 30.3 points a game. Kendrick Nunn averaging 26.4 points a game. 476 points so far this season. And just he's taking advantage of his second chance. He's taking tremendous advantage of a second chance that not everybody gets.
He's got athleticism. We don't speak that about many of the Illini players. Mm-hmm. He's got athleticism.
Yeah, and it would have been nice to have, again, if he did not get in trouble, would have been nice to have him last year. I think it's an NCAA tournament team with him because of the athleticism, which they also lacked last year and becoming a theme. So, again, good to see him do well with his second chance and making up for the mistake, and I hope he's got his life cleaned up and turned around. And I don't know if he's an NBA player or not. He's going to play ball somewhere next year.
That's
really, really good. And well, But Oakland, I watched him play against Michigan State this year, some of that game, and you know he did well against the Spartans. So he does this against good competition too. He was injured before that game and still played the whole game.
Yeah.
So all right,
Marcus Cousins, by the way, I just want to throw that.
Oh,
out.
Oh yeah, you
what
should.
A tough loss for the Pelicans. Well, they won 6 out of 7 and
like
won
that.
Another good game last night. He got hurt in the last minute, diving for a ball, I believe, he's got an Achilles problem, going to have surgery. Then he'd be lost for the season.
Yeah, they have not officially diagnosed it, but apparently everyone with the Pelicans are like, yeah, this is a torn Achilles. He's done. And it's disappointing. Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, are a great duo.
1-2 punch.
Yeah, I thought New Orleans would be a better team than they are, but they're 27-21, sixth seed in the West.
You thought they'd be better than 27-21?
I thought they would because of those two. They're so good. Anthony Davis is just incredible. Yeah. And I thought the two of them together would really make it difficult from an opponent standpoint. But just six games above 500. The Western Conference, though, is really tough with Houston and San Antonio and Golden State, of course. Take a timeout. We're going to bring in Jeff Rabjohns, covers the Indiana Hoosiers. Get his thoughts on Indiana moving forward here. Of course, they lost to the Illini the other night, 73-71. Get his thoughts on Archie Miller, what he thinks, how he's doing in Season 1. That and more coming up next. Stay with us here on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Lauren Tate, Michael Kaiser with you. 47 degrees at 10:07. Please be joined now by Jeff Rabjohns, covers the Indiana Hoosiers and recruiting. Of course, was in town the other night when Indiana fell to the Illini 73-71. Jeff, Illini fans want to thank you for the first victory of the season for the Illini Big Ten play.
Well, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that I think maybe Laron Black and Trent Frazier and Nicholas Kipper, I'm going to say they had a little more to do with it than I did.
Probably. Jeff covers Indiana recruiting for Pigs.com, part of the Scout.com network. Well, Jeff, what have you seen from Archie Miller in his first season? I know they had a couple of lapses, Fort Wayne and I believe Indiana State, lost to Fort Wayne 2 years in a row now, if I'm correct. How much growth have you seen from them since early part of the season and adapting to what Archie wants?
Well, the biggest things that I see and hear, you can see on the court and you can hear, behind the scenes from, people and people who are in practice, is there's the implementation of a system and there's very strong belief in implementing that system. He's much more defensive-oriented than Tom Crean was. And that's not to say anybody's 100% right or 100% wrong, but at almost every turn where Tom Crean would say, okay, we got 20 minutes in practice, a little extra today, we're going to shoot threes, Archie's going to go, we're working on transition defense. Where Tom would turn right, Archie's turning left. They're just fundamentally different in what they believe is important about the game of basketball. And Archie's defensive system is essentially pack line principles. And that takes a little while to learn because all five guys have to make reads, and all five guys have to make the same read, or you end up with two guys going with a screener or two guys going with the guy on a slip screen or two guys staying baseline on a pin down and a rock up. And then you end up with what? An opponent's wide open, which is what happened against Indiana State and what happened against Fort Wayne. But what you see is defense has slowly been improving. The numbers are improving slightly, but just the play, if you watch them actually play, their guards are getting better at keeping somebody in front. Their bigs are getting better at understanding at a hard hedge at a ball screen up top if you're not going to ice it. So the philosophy is there. Obviously, the philosophy was very successful at Dayton. There are elements of the philosophy that, he learned from his dad, a coach, some developed with his brother, who's obviously been very successful at Xavier in Arizona. So I see the implementation of a very different philosophy. And I also see the idea that there's accountability. And I think that was one of the things that IU fans got frustrated with Tom Crean about. Players would have some really bad stretches, and there would be no accountability. Accountability meaning what? Sit down next to me on the bench for a few minutes, son. That's not how we play here. That kind of stuff. And Archie's, you know, he's putting guys on the bench. And no, not forever. You know, he's not going to bench people for a game. But he's going to pull you out and let you know, yeah, that's not what you do. But I think those are the two biggest things that I see. And I would say third, and this is probably number one as it relates toward the future, is he has reconnected Indiana basketball with high school basketball coaches in the state of Indiana. That was something that was slipping fast and far the last few years of Tom Crean's tenure. And Archie Miller walks in the door, and within a matter of months lands a four-star point guard from McCutchen High School in Indiana, right up there next to West Lafayette, and a 6'6", four-star shooter out of South Bend, an area where IU had not had much success for decades. So he's also reconnecting Indiana with the state, and I think that, you know, obviously recruiting, you know, that's the lifeblood of your program moving forward.
Jeff, why do you think that things fell apart in terms of the high school coaching relationship with Tom Crean? Why do you think that happened? Because Indiana is such a hotbed for basketball, and, you know, it's Indiana. I mean, kids want to play for there, but they were going elsewhere, especially the kid that went to UCLA, Chris Wilkes, who went to UCLA.
Well, Chris Wilkes at UCLA. You got Kyle Guy, Mr. Basketball, from a few years out in Virginia now. You know, you can go to Gary Harris, Michigan State, Zach Ervin, Mr. Basketball, Michigan. A whole list of players who have not only not gone to Indiana, but left the state entirely. And, you know, that's a little bit of it. Players look around nationally more, but the disconnect was very real. And there, I think there were a couple reasons. One, Indiana high school coaches did not feel like Tom Crean was prioritizing their players. Probably the most noticeable thing came a couple falls ago when the fall evaluation period started, which is when college coaches can go to open gyms and at high schools and watch players play. And Tom Crean went somewhere out of state, and Virginia, Purdue, a whole bunch of other states or schools from various states were at Lawrence North High School to see Kyle Guy, who went on to be Mr. Basketball that year. That was a visible example of, excuse me, the cost. I hope I had the mute button in time there.
You're right.
You know, that was a visible example of what the high school coaches, you know, were seeing. You know, IU coaches being out of state, not being around. And then there are a lot of high school coaches in the state of Indiana who really believe in how the game should be played, if you will, the old phrase. And they believe, you know, you need to play good defense. You should be solid defensively. You should value the basketball. You should take good shots. And some of them saw Tom Crean's teams play, and they saw high turnover rates, 20% or more per game on a regular basis, nothing being done about it. They saw very poor defense. I mean, there are some almost infamous video clips up on social media about, you know, some plays where IU guys just go the wrong way, and then they cut to the sideline. There's Tom Crean clapping, and people are like, what are you clapping about? What's going on? Why isn't anything being done? But I think the lack of communication, the lack of showing up, you know, to open gyms, to other things throughout the state of Indiana, and then the style of play. I think those are the three things that started really strained relationships between Indiana high school coaches and the previous IU coaching staff.
Jeff, this is Lauren. I'm always fascinated by this discussion of Purdue's recruiting and the fact that Indiana, for a long time, you helped me here, there was a long period, I think it was said that Purdue never got a player that Indiana wanted from the state. Is that right? I mean, during a long period of time?
For a long stretch, yes. Yes. Now, some of those stories, there might be a little bit of folklore involved about whether Indiana wanted the player or not.
Right.
You know, because certainly with the big dog, Glenn Robinson, you know, I think anybody would have taken him.
Absolutely.
Now, whether or not Bob Knight actually actively recruited him or just kind of bowed out early, that depends upon who you believe. But overall, for many years, if Indiana wanted a player in the state, it was going to be very difficult for anybody else to get that player. But even under Knight, you know, that started to slip some. You know, you had Eric Montross from Lawrence North, right there in Indianapolis, who Bob Knight went after very, very hard. 1988-89 was his senior year. And, you know, he ends up going out to North Carolina and actually helping Carolina win the title. So there were guys who got out of state. It's not like guys getting out of state was completely new. But it was the number of guys that get a guy out of state that went away. But yeah, as far as IU and Purdue, it was seldom that IU lost a head-to-head battle there.
Yeah, and I'm talking about that long period when Katy had a lot of good teams, and, of course, now you're seeing excellent basketball teams at Purdue, and they've certainly overcome that, whatever that deficit was in terms of recruiting in the state. Where do you think Purdue's headed this year?
If they stay healthy, I think to the Final Four.
Do you really?
I think it's a terrific team. They've got really good point guard play. They've got a variety of shooters. They've got guys 6'5 and taller, multiple guys 6'5 and taller making threes. They've got a tree trunk in the middle in Isaac Haas. They've got another legitimate post player coming in as his backup. They've even got 6'5 Nojel Eastern, four-star players, their backup point guard. I don't know how many college teams in the country have a guy taller than 6'4 who was four stars coming out of high school, who's the backup point guard. So I think they have all the pieces necessary. I'm not saying I definitely predict they're going to the Final Four. I think right now, I think they look like a Final Four team as we sit here in January. Obviously, you have to stay healthy and all that jazz. But I think they've got all the pieces that are necessary. And unless they have some big stumbles, they're going to have the advantage of being a number one seed. Because, you know, that obviously helps your path with the bracket.
Absolutely.
And I also think Matt Painter did a really good job putting this team together. And I don't think he's got nearly enough credit nationally because he's a really particular recruiter. I mean, he always says, you know, it's like if you were trying to get a date. You got to know who might say yes and who's definitely going to say no. And he looks around and he doesn't go after everybody. He goes after certain guys. And he had some success in three classes in a row that kind of led to their mix of seniors, juniors, and sophomores. But I think he did a terrific job at identifying guys. Vincent Edwards, when Purdue got on him when he was a high school sophomore, he was a pedestrian player. Mm. Now, there was upside because of his athleticism, but he was just okay. But Painter, you know, saw what he wanted to see and went after him. I think Painter did a really good job. I mean, sometimes you see teams that have a lot of talent, but it's a little bit of the land of misfit toys, if you will. You know, it's like the pieces don't really fit there. But with Purdue, I think Painter did a really good job putting together a team where the pieces are good and the pieces fit.
What did you think of Illinois? You were over here for the game. You saw the Indiana game and the win by Illinois. What did you pick up here, and where do you think we're headed?
I think Illinois is headed upward because I think they've got good young players. And, you know, Underwood's a good coach. He knows what he's doing. And then the style that he plays, you know, it's different than what a lot of people do. I think he's the only guy in the Big Ten who really runs that defense where you deny everything. No matter where the offensive man is, you're trying to deny the pass. That makes you a hard prep. When you're different than everybody else, you become a hard prep. So I think that's, you know, there are built-in advantages to that. As far as personnel, I really like the young guys. Trent Frazier I like a lot. I think he's going to be a really solid kind of guard. Mark Smith, you know, I like him a lot. Got a chance to see him when he was playing down in the Metro East area, and obviously he was Mr. Basketball in the state of Indiana. I know he's got a ways to go now, but, you know, that's a pretty good freshman. When you're looking at, okay, what can he be moving forward? So I really like him a lot. And obviously, you know, AO's coming in next year. So I think the backcourt will continue to get better. I think, you know, they're going to have to develop some guys in the front court. But I really like the backcourt. And I really like the way LeRon Black is playing. His ability to create space and clear space, especially on that little fadeaway that he's got going now, that thing – at his size, his height, and with that high release point, that thing's very difficult to challenge, much less truly guard it. So I think he's having a really nice year, and I think he should be a good player moving forward for Illinois too.
Jeff Rabjohns joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Give him a follow on Twitter at Jeff Rabjohns. Covers the Hoosiers and recruiting for Pigs.com, part of the Scout.com network. Well, because you're covering a first-year coach as well, just how difficult is it? I mean, Indiana obviously has Juwan Morgan and Robert Johnson and others, but there, when you don't have a really, really talented roster, which is most of the time when you have a new coach come in, how difficult is it to get the team, you know, going and what the coach wants, and how long does that realistically take?
Yeah, I think it takes a while, and I basically don't make any judgments until year three. And the reason being is if you look around basketball, college basketball particularly, historically, lots of people didn't get it going until year three. I mean, you can even look at Mike Krzyzewski. If Duke would have made a decision about Mike Krzyzewski after year one, they would have fired him. It was not successful. Dean Smith was not successful for his first 4 years at North Carolina. You know, you can go through other, you know, places, you know, Sean Miller, if you want to go recent, at Arizona, missed the NCAA tournament two of his first 3 years. Arizona's been pretty successful since then. So I usually wait until year three. As far as year one, part of year one is putting in your system, whatever your system is. Brad Underwood's got to do it at Illinois. You know, different guys, different places, you know, have to do it. So I think that's part of that. That's a big part of it, is put your system in. I think the other part of it is, you got to figure out who's going to buy in, who's willing to play this way, who's going to be unselfish, who's going to be a good teammate, who wants to stay. You know, there's almost always attrition the first year of a first-year coach. I mean, I can't sit here and say it always happens, but I know the average is more than one transfer per year after a first-year coach comes in a major college program. So Indiana's already had one, you know, Curtis Jones, who was brought in to kind of be a spot-up shooter, was not a defender by any stretch of anybody's imagination. And that's nothing – that's okay. You can be that guy, but that guy did not fit with Archie Miller whatsoever. And so Curtis Jones transferred at the semester break, which is fine. It's, you know, it's like a lot of coaches say, if you don't want to play for me, tell me as soon as possible so that, you know, we all can move on. And I think, you know, that wasn't necessarily a bad thing for Indiana. But you see, you know, who's going to stay. And I think that doesn't get answered until, until season ends, you know, March or, you know, what have you, around that point in time. But I would not be surprised if there is attrition at any school that has a major college program and has a first-year coach.
Jeff, how big would it be for the Big Ten for Illinois to get going again, to have Illinois back near the, you know, top, you know, 3 to 5 teams in the Big Ten on a more regular basis? Just how important is that to the conference as a whole?
You know, I think the Big Ten is strong enough as a brand that whoever is good in the Big Ten, you know, gets national attention. You know, I don't think that the Big Ten is dependent upon any certain school. You know, years ago people used to say, well, you know, Indiana draws the most TV viewers, so it helps the Big Ten when Indiana's good. It might help with TV numbers, but I don't think it has a big impact on the Big Ten. But I do think from the standpoint of just interest level in the Big Ten overall, you know, I think Illinois, correct me if I'm wrong here, but Illinois and Indiana have the most or second most alums in the Chicago area, a major metropolitan area. So certainly it would help, you know, TV interest and things like that. And, you know, Illinois is a place where, you know, when that team is good, it's a big deal, and it's a big deal nationally. And it's a big deal there, as you guys obviously know well. I mean, I remember being there for several games in the 2004-05 season. I mean, that was as good as atmosphere as you could find anywhere in college basketball.
The place, and you know what? They carried it anywhere they went.
They did. I actually had to cover the Illinois-Purdue game that year at Purdue, and that top bowl at Mackey Arena was almost all orange.
Yeah,
it was. I'm sure you guys were there, obviously, but I'll never forget that. I did not think that would happen at Purdue, or a place where, you know, they often sell out and have pride in their program. But that upper deck at Mackey, that thing was almost all orange. And it was like, oh, wow, okay. These people are not only happy to go to the home games, they're happy to get in their cars and drive a few miles. I think, you know, that's certainly noticeable. So there's no question that Illinois has got tremendous history and a tremendous fan base that is very active when the team is good.
Well, Jeff, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much. Good stuff. We'll watch the Hoosiers the rest of the way and maybe get them to work on their free throws a little bit as we go on the next few weeks here.
That definitely has been a problem for them, no doubt. Hey, thanks for having me,
sure.
Warren. Always great seeing you, my friend.
Hey, Jeff, good to see you. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. That is
All right, take care, guys.
Yep. Jeff Rabjohns. Give him a follow on Twitter at Jeff Rabjohns. Covers the Indiana Hoosiers and recruiting for Pigs.com, part of the Scout.com network. Take a timeout. We'll come back in a little bit at 10:30. Tim Evans of the Indianapolis Star will join us on the Larry Nassar situation. His paper got the whole thing started. Him and a couple of his colleagues there at the Indianapolis Star. That's coming up next here on DWS.
I spoke to my administrative staff, coaches, many student athletes, and most importantly, my wife Nancy and my children over the course of the past week. They are all incredible people, amazing Spartans. I've always been a Spartan, and I always will be. It's been an absolute honor to guide the athletic department for the last decade. That being said, today I'm announcing my retirement. This was not an easy decision for my family. And you should know, and you should not jump to any conclusions based upon our decision. Listen to the facts. I'm not running away from anything. I'm running towards something. Comfort, compassion, and understanding for the survivors in our community. Togetherness, time, and love for my family.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. 47 degrees at 10:31. Lauren Tate, Michael Kaiser with you. That was former athletic director Mark Hollis announcing his retirement yesterday, stepping down, the second major official at Michigan State, stepping down this week following the president earlier this week after Larry Nassar was sentenced on Wednesday for 40 to 75 years in prison for the sexually assaulting hundreds of girls over the course of decades. Joining us now from the Indianapolis Star, Tim Evans. He and two of his colleagues, Tim, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys kind of got this whole thing started and got the, and along with the gymnast, you guys were referenced in court the other day by the attorney general there in Michigan before the sentencing. Is that correct assessment of how you guys just kind of got this whole thing started in terms of Larry Nassar?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sure.
We broke the story about Larry Nassar as we were in the middle of an investigation into sexual abuse in gymnastics and how USA Gymnastics, the national governing body, which is located in Indianapolis, had not always taken allegations of sexual assault and sexual abuse seriously or forward them to law enforcement. So that's what led us to Larry Nassar.
So that was kind of like it wasn't even a focus on Larry Nassar at first. You guys were just kind of looking at the widespread abuse and when did you make the connection? And was it something that you realized early on that this was like a really major situation?
Yeah. My colleagues, Mark Alicia and Marissa Kwiatkowski, and I had spent about 6 months in the first part of 2016 investigating USA Gymnastics and about 100 coaches accused or convicted of abusing young athletes. We published our story on August 4th, 2016, the night before the Rio Olympics opened. That same day, we got an email from a young lady named Rachel Denhollander, who said, I've got some information. I don't know if it fits with what you're doing because it doesn't involve a coach. It involves Larry Nassar, the longtime team doctor. At that time, Nassar was a name that was vaguely familiar, but he wasn't on our radar as someone who we wanted to look into in terms of sexual abuse or anything like that. So we quickly backgrounded Nassar and found out, you know, what reputation he had. Within the next week or so, two other women came forward independently and told us almost the same exact story that Rachel had told us. So at that point, we realized, you know, there's likely something to this story. And it's going to be a big deal because Nassar, you know, has been the team doctor, been around USA, Team USA for 30 some years. and is kind of an icon in the sports world, the sports medicine world. So that's when we really started digging down on it.
Give Tim a follow on Twitter at StarWatch, Tim. And did you, at that point, when you started to get the multiple victims contacting you guys independently, did you ever think it reached to what it has today with the Michigan State officials stepping down and becoming this huge, really international story because it's U.S. Olympians who have been involved, like Ali Raisman, who is obviously a huge name across the world in gymnastics. Did you ever think it reached to what it has now?
Oh, no. You know, it's kind of surreal thinking about it now. You know, we knew we had three survivors, and we felt very confident in their stories that they were being truthful with us. And we figured, you know, if there are three, there are probably more. Maybe we'll have 10 or 15. But, you know, 150, I heard last night that maybe 200 women have come forward now. And, you know, the statistics show that as many as you know, 80% of sexual assault victims never come forward. So likely still the tip of the iceberg. And the other part of that is, you know, we weren't really focused on Michigan State. And so that was kind of a surprise to us, their deep connection. You know, we were dealing with Nasser in the context of his work away from Michigan State primarily, and, you know, the Crowley Ranch and at competitions and that kind of thing. I think there are kind of three things came together to make it into an international story. And it was the Me Too movement, then the Ali Raisman, Michaela Maroney, Gabby Douglas, Simone Biles all came out, you know, just in recent weeks or months. And then the televised hearing, which you just couldn't ignore the horrible stories those women shared. And, you know, that's what really, I think, blew it up into an international story.
Did you, this is Lauren Tate, Tim. What was the year that you actually started this investigation?
Thanks, Lauren. I grew up in McLean County, Leroy, and I'm a big fan. So when I saw your name, I jumped at the opportunity to get on. But anyhow, we started in early 2016. We got a tip about USA Gymnastics. And that so, you know, we worked on it for pretty nonstop for more than a year and a half. And then it kind of trickled out, and we went on some other directions now, and we're into some other things.
Well, what you mentioned 100 coaches. What's taking place in that arena right now in terms of the coaches?
Some of those coaches had been banned by USA Gymnastics, but typically they weren't banned until after they'd been arrested and convicted. And what we were looking at is, had there been prior warnings? Did USA Gymnastics miss or ignore red flags or allegations about those coaches? And we found several coaches where USA Gymnastics had been warned, told they were molesting kids, and didn't do anything, and these coaches went on to molest other kids. You know, there was an opportunity to stop and save them. And so that was kind of our primary focus initially. And then it's kind of grown, you know, into the culture that allowed this kind of thing to happen, that allowed Larry Nasser, you know, gymnastics is a little different than track and field, where the first guy to the line is the winner. You know, it's subjective judging. And we found that the culture was very tight. And if you cross the wrong people, you challenge people, your athletes might get knocked down in the next competition. You know, they might get a point or a half point taken off. So people were very reluctant to challenge the structure of the organization.
What are you doing right now relative to this overall story?
We are following a number of leads, and including, you know, we've gotten a flood of new leads, but we've got a story that's going to be coming Sunday at IndyStar.com. Plug, sorry.
That's okay.
Looking at the future of USA Gymnastics, you know, the USOC called the last week for them to completely get all their board members to resign. They'll have to appoint a new board. You know, their sponsors have been fleeing. They're facing lawsuits in a number of states. You know, they're in a fight for their life, USA Gymnastics. And the reason we focus on this initially is USA Gymnastics is based in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. So that's how, you know, we kind of first decided to jump on the story.
It was amazing how many young women have come forth after all this time. It seemed like it all started with Crosby and has gone mm-hmm. from there. And as they become more brave, the more stuff comes out.
Well, I think, you know, you saw this at the sentencing hearing. You know, a lot of these women have never talked to anyone about this, or only, you know, their doctors or therapists, their parents or their husbands, you know, now. And a lot of them, I think, thought they were alone. It was just me, and a lot of them, you know, for no legitimate reason, but it's the way they felt, blamed themselves or felt, you know, like they had some role, felt shame, and I think they felt empowered as they saw some of these women come forward, and it kind of just it spiraled, and you know, they were calling themselves an army by the end, and you know, women who had initially planned to testify at the hearing anonymously put their names on it, and again, I think it was a good opportunity for them to start healing. I'm sure they've got a long way to go for a lot of them.
Tim Evans of the Indy Star. Tim, we'll let the plug slide since you used to deliver the News Gazette on your bike back in the day. I think
that was my introduction to the news business. So
yeah, well, we'll let that slide since you used to work for this company.
Okay.
So it's all good. Well, obviously a lot of people have heard this, but I wanted to play this again for those who did not. And of course, you've heard it. You were watching it as well. But the judge just didn't hold back throughout the entire, you know, 7 or 8 day sentencing hearing. And it was just something incredible just to hear what she said. I've been in courtrooms for crimes and things like that, and judges usually aren't this outspoken. So let's hear from the judge in the Larry Nassar sentencing case.
So I need to send a message to the parole board in the event somehow God is gracious, and I know he is, and you survive the 60 years in federal court first, and then you start in my 40 years? You've gone off the page here as to what I'm doing. My page only goes 100 years. Sir, I'm giving you 175 years, which is 2,100 months. I just signed your death warrant. I find that you don't get it, that you're a danger. You remain a danger. I'm a judge who believes in life and rehabilitation when rehabilitation is possible. I have many defendants come back here and show me the great things they've done in their lives after probation, after parole. I don't find that's possible with you.
I just signed your death warrant. That stuck out with me the last couple of days. And again, you don't hear judges say that too often. As you heard throughout the thing, Tim, she was she really spoke, especially when Larry Nassar sent a letter asking for this to stop. That really upset her. Were you surprised at how stern she was with Larry through the last week and a half or so?
Yeah, I was surprised by the whole kind of atmosphere. Like, you know, I spent a lot of years in court, fortunately covering things. But you know,
that's good.
And I think, you know, He before he even starts this sentence, it could be 175 years, he has to serve another 60-year sentence first. So I think she is not concerned if she's overturned and instead he gets 40 years or he gets 30 years. I think her primary focus was giving these women a venue, women who'd been abused and had been ignored or not believed. And I think her push was, I'm going to give him a voice and, you know, I'll take my lumps if he appeals or something like that. So it was really, really remarkable.
Well, I mean, we've all reporters, and you know, we don't really strive for attention from our stories, but you guys are getting a lot of attention, deservedly so. I would imagine this is probably because of the scope of this thing. It's probably one of the bigger stories of you and your two colleagues' career.
Certainly, you know, it's blown up, and certainly I've been doing this for 40 years, but it's the biggest story, you know, that I've been involved in, and you know. We've gotten a lot of attention, and it's great, and it's humbling. And, you know, I think part of it, the attention, we've kind of in journalism circles, so with the nerds, we've kind of become heroes because of this whole fake news and
yes.
Attacks on the media. So I think, you know, we've kind of shown that there is real important stuff going on out there. So I think that maybe helped generate some attention, and then some of the things the judge and the prosecutor had said.
Yeah, investigative journalism has kind of taken a hit of late, but this definitely goes to show that it's still alive, and it's something that is needed, because as you heard the attorney general say there, that this he's still treating people. Is that right?
You know, but the interesting thing to me is that we just saw this story come out today that Emmert and the NCAA had information along these lines in 2010. Is that right? 2010?
Yeah, on the sexual assaults at Michigan State.
And nothing? That was just strictly Michigan State?
Yes, I think so. I believe so.
Yeah, that was Michigan State, yeah.
But it was Nassar. It was Nassar, right? Or am I wrong?
No, these are the athletes, if I'm correct.
Yeah, I think that was with the basketball players, maybe.
Okay. Well,
football.
Then I'm mistaken.
Football, yeah, I'm sorry, yeah.
Could I just saw it come up on our flash across the scroll on our TV, and I didn't realize, but evidently Emmert's in a little bit of trouble too. If he didn't push something when he was apprised of it,
Yeah, and you know that's something we've found, and I've covered child abuse and child welfare for years. Is one of the reasons I got pulled into this project, and that's such a common theme. And they kind of circle the wagons. They try to keep people quiet, and it's not just USA Gymnastics. It's it's happened in USA Swimming. It's happened in at Penn State. It's happened in scouting and anywhere where kids are. The pedophiles are going to kind of try to get their way in, and a lot of people are more concerned about their image and their income than they are the welfare of the kids that are often their real bread and butter.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for your time. It's good to have somewhat of a local guy on and who broke a major international story. Congratulations to you on your work.
And I want to mention,
Paul, I appreciate it.
I want to mention that Leroy brings back bad memories, because when I was a kid in 1944, I think that what might have been the year, Merle Schlosser and Leroy beat Monticello in football, and that was Monticello's only loss.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember the Schlosser family,
yeah.
Small town, so.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody knows everyone, so.
Well, it might be the last time you're on, then. He doesn't like Leroy, so.
Oh, gosh. Maybe I shouldn't have said that then. Sorry.
No, maybe you shouldn't.
Thank you.
Yep. How long have you been at the Indy Star? You said you've been in business for 40 years.
Star, 20 years, yeah.
20 years now?
I've been doing this for 40 years overall, so I'm winding down my career, hopefully.
Sure. Well,
hey, Tim, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Tim. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. It's great speaking with you both. Have a great day.
You too. Bye. Thanks. Bye. That is Tim Evans of the Indy Star, part of a trio of reporters over there who covered this story. Again, just got started in the sexual abuse allegations involving gymnastics. Larry Nassar wasn't even on their radar until gymnasts started coming forward. And here we are today. We're sentenced up to 175 years in prison. Give Tim a follow on Twitter at StarWatchTim. Well, we'll take a timeout. A couple of things to get to before we wrap up the show today. A couple text messages as well. Big event coming up for Fighting Illini athletes on Monday. I want to talk to you about that coming up. I'll let you know a special guest is going to be here on Monday back in town. Illini fans might like who it is. We'll tell you who that is if you haven't heard it already. Coming up next here on DWS.
'80-77 Arizona. Illinois has roared back from 15 down to cut it to 3. Inbound, Ingram steals it. Head has it in the left wing. Out top to Williams. Darren for the tie. He got it.
Oh, my.
He got it. 80-80. Darren Williams with the biggest three of his life.
Now they have to play straight up defense. No fouls at this point.
34 seconds to go. 80-80 Illinois and Arizona. Brown all over Shakur. Arizona. Oh, my. I can't believe what I've just seen. Illinois up one. Arizona. Adams. Dumper. No good. Illinois is going to the Final Four. Illinois is going to the Final Four. 90-89. Roger Powell pointing to the sky. Luther Head and D. Brown bang chest at midcourt. 13 seconds to go. And for the first time in Illinois history, they will advance to the championship game. We'll see you Monday night in St. Louis.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. 48 degrees at 10:52. Lauren Tate, Michael Kaiser with you. You might be wondering why we played that. Well, one of those guys in the highlights, Darren Williams, is going to be back in town for the Fighting Illini Athletic Jock Jams. Returns on Monday. He's going to be in town this weekend. It's at Bollinger Auditorium. It's like the 9th annual event. It benefits local charities, but he's one of the celebrity judges. We tried to get him on this morning. He just wasn't available. He had to watch his son play basketball.
That Brian and I can get him on Monday morning. We'll know later.
Yeah. But it's just cool he's coming back to town for something like that. And Dylan Meyer reached out to him.
Yeah.
On Twitter, and sent him a message on Twitter, and Darren got back to him, and he's like, "Yeah, I'll come," because he's not playing in the NBA now, and had a very long NBA career, successful NBA career, ended in Cleveland last year. Unfortunately, they didn't win the championship when he was with them in the finals, because it's Golden State, and Golden State usually wins, with the exception of 2 years ago. But it's really cool that he's coming back and participating in an event like this.
Yeah, he was. Who would you consider Illinois' greatest basketball player, all things considered?
Ever?
Yeah.
Boy, have I been long enough to even be qualified to answer that question?
Since 89, maybe. It's a really tough decision.
It really is.
I mean, because Darren and Harper and Nick Anderson all left after their junior years. Mm-hmm. All three of those would have been the greatest Illinois player in my mind had they stayed one more year. And Harper had a tremendous NBA career in which he got better scoring-wise every year. And, of course, Nick Anderson was, I thought, the best player on that 1989 team, although some people will point to Battle. And, you know, you can argue about Kendall Gill, and you can argue about the players on the 2005 team. I mean, I don't think that the D. Brown was the greatest player, but he came as a freshman, he was about as good as any. He just never got a lot better. He was the same player all 4 years almost.
Darren would have had probably some records or close to it if he would have stayed, come back for his fourth year. And who knows where that team would have gone? They made the second round without him. Because I think he could have been even better, but he was the number three overall pick. I think he made the right call there.
He made the right call, but if you go back and look at him as a freshman, he had all kinds of problems as a freshman. He was just he was a good freshman, but he didn't average many points. He couldn't make free throws. He just, you know, but then as a sophomore, he got better, and as a junior, he was sensational.
Yep.
So, you know, some guys leap and other guys level off.
Yep, and again, so Darren Williams in town for Fighting Illini Jock Jams on Monday night at Bollinger Auditorium at 7:30. Got to get some tickets to the event. You can get them now at the Athletics Ticket Office at State Farm Center or online or at the door at the night of the show Monday night at 7:30. Also, Lauren, a celebrity judge, is Hope Whitman, Josh Whitman's wife.
Good.
So I wonder if Josh is going to be there, you know, trying to tell her who to vote for. We'll find out about that. No, I'm just kidding, but... So it's a good event on Monday night. Again, proceeds from the event go to local charities. Well, we'll talk a little bit of Illini basketball here. Let me read a couple text messages. Back in action on Tuesday night. They got the weekend off. Text in on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line from John in Decatur. What do we have in football coaches from the Indianapolis area / Indiana area? What about Paul Spicer, who coached under Lovie at Tampa Bay? And I think you're referencing a couple of position opens here on the staff. And I'm not going to even get in the, puzzle of Lovie Smith and figure out who he's even on his list. I'm just going to wait till we hear who it is.
And you never know when a coach might apply here or be interested here and be interviewed here, like Canada, and winds up being the offensive coordinator at Maryland. Maybe he took the Maryland job over the Illinois job. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea.
He was definitely here.
Yeah, he was on the list.
Maryland was open, and he might have applied. He might have interviewed for both jobs and took the Maryland job.
Matt Canada, of course, was at LSU this past season, and they went their separate ways. 618 area code on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. It is such a Herculean task to get Big Ten quality athletes to go to Illinois. Why is Illinois in the Big Ten to be fired? It might be a little sarcasm there, I think. Illinois can get some Big Ten players. They just can't get them consistently. can't get enough of them, maybe I should say.
And I will always contend, if you're not successful in your home state, you're going to have a hard time, you know. And I know that if you're Notre Dame or Ohio State, but Ohio State is successful in their home state, and they also recruit nationally. A lot of top schools recruit nationally, but the most of them that are successful in their home state.
Yeah. I mean, Ohio State's going to get who they want at home.
Yeah.
It's Ohio State. Dan and Champagne text in one word, Frank, and reference one of the best players in school history. Frank Williams is pretty good. But it's just there's just so many names for us to sift through. Maybe it's a show we do, a topic on a show we do another day.
I don't
day.
Think there's an answer, and I've looked at it. I don't know who the best player was.
I just don't. I think you're probably the most qualified person in town to answer that question.
I don't know about that. I know that I'm unsure. I know when Harper played, I thought he was the best I'd seen. And then as we went along, I thought Nick was the best. And then Darren was awfully, awfully good. Darren only averaged 12 points a game as a junior. And, you know, freshman, let me tell you his statistics as a freshman. Okay. He shot free throws. He made 49 out of 72. Is that him? No, that's not him. Let me try that again. He made 28 out of 79 attempts from the field. He made 24 of 45 free throws. That's terrible.
Yeah, that's not very
and
good.
And he averaged 6 points a game. Yeah. That is Darren Williams as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
So don't make a judgment on freshmen.
Thank you. thank you, thank you. Like, I don't even pay attention. And unless they're like five-star, one-and-done freshmen, I don't pay attention if they're really bad. And right now, Mark Smith is really struggling. I'm not interested in whether he's going to work out a conversation, or whether he's going to be a bust or not, or whether it's going to work out or not. I just don't know, and no one knows. It's we have to see how this plays out, and it's just way too early. We're talking he's 22 games into his career, and I'm just using an example. Yeah, Trent Frazier looks great right now, but not all freshmen are good right away. Not all freshmen adjust going from high school to major college basketball, and I think it just takes time. That's a great example right there. Malcolm Hill wasn't very good his freshman year either.
Do you know who the leading scorer in 2005 was? Luther Head.
I was going to say Luther.
You know who was second? D. Brown.
Yep.
You know who was third? Darren Williams.
I was going to say James Augustine. But
well, no.
Nope.
James was, he was fifth. Powell was ahead of him.
Yeah. One final text message. Considering the timing and magnitude of the violation of young athletes by Dr. Nasser, is it even more disturbing that a local U of I professor referencing Jay Rosenstein has been given a free pass on videoing in the public restroom? Our state's attorney needs to adopt a zero-tolerance policy. It does not matter if you're a doctor, professor. It is not okay. I wish I had more time to discuss that, but we're out of time today. Jay, of course, is on paid administrative leave. Thanks to our guests today, Rod Smith, Ryan Easterling, Jeff Rabjohns, and Tim Evans of the Indy Star. Thanks so much for your phone calls and your text messages as well. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks to Evan Kahn. For Lauren Tate, I'm Michael Kaiser.